Hi, everyone. It's the last week of June, and I will post this on Tuesday, the 28th. And I'm just delighted to say that I actually was able to do another Deeper Rhythms interview series. It just all flowed together over this last weekend. And what follows is an interview with my friend, Dr. Lisa Angelina, who is an audiologist here in the Asheville community. And coinciding with this interview is the new moon, which is the Thunder Moon. And I wrote a poem in honor of the new moon of this new phase and cycle. And I want to share that with you. And it amazes me that once again, synchronicity is flowing with this, because this actually talks about several of the themes that Lisa and I get into in the interview. So with that, let me share Thunder Moon. Thunder Moon, Buck Moon, Hay Moon. Regardless, this lunar cycle is characterized by fruition and majesty and being heard. In contemplating the names, I am drawn to Thunder Moon. Even as a child, I was never afraid of thunder, the mighty boom one feels in the throat. I reveled in the sound of distant rumble, the steady advance and crash overhead, the eventual retreat. The experience connected me to something wild and alive. I come from people who thunder, and somehow I trust this more than the ways of those who dissemble or traffic in pleasant trees. When the thunder is over, it's over. The heart opens again. We move on. That's not to say a skillfulness can't be learned. I'm discovering that often the most powerful sound is silence. It's important to have access to one's thunder. Open to this. Live it. Be it. And with that, I'll just add right before we move into the interview, and I'll also add a few notes at the end of the interview with something that we touch on in the interview, and then our music, as usual. But I want to just also say that in the time I've last spoken with you, I got to see the film Elvis, and I highly recommend that. Again, here's another moment where in the culture, we all know that name, and we all know some of that story. And here with this beautiful introduction about thunder and voice and being heard and sound, I highly encourage you to check out that film. It's just this incredibly visual circus, I would say. It almost has a circus aesthetic. And the main actor who plays Elvis, his name is Austin Butler. And oh my gosh, he nails it. He does such an amazing job, very much in the spirit of how Joaquin Phoenix nails the role of Johnny Cash in Walk the Line. So it's a beautiful ensemble. It's a beautiful cast. It's a long film, and it's another way to enjoy story and connection and watch, you know, one of the greats, one of the icons of our time, and connect with what his story was about and using his voice in many, many ways. So I just have to plug that, you know, as we're going into a conversation about voice and thunder. And I hope wherever you find yourself, this is a really difficult moment in our country. Once again, the Roe v. Wade ruling is news now. And again, I keep this podcast apolitical as much as I can, because I want everybody to feel welcome in this space. And more broadly, I want to be touching on the ways that no matter what position any of us are holding on any of the numerous issues that are so fraught within the culture, that we're going to the deeper places to experience our own emotional elasticity around these issues and our own truth, and then that deeper well where we actually affect the change that is appropriate for us in our lives. So it's not that I avoid it. it's important to talk about these things. I just, in this podcast, seek to go underneath all of the cacophony, and it's a very intentional choice on my part. But regardless, there's a lot going on in the culture at this moment about, again, all kinds of layers of voices being heard. And my hope is that the themes that we're exploring on this podcast are helping level the playing field for every single individual, because it is my experience, as well as my belief, that going into these depths is where we all have access to the same kind of power and wisdom in any present moment. And again, we invoke change, we answer calls to change as appropriate, for sure. And I support that. But do it from a place of stillness and knowing what you're really about, because then it's more fruitful and it's more effective. So many things, yet all together, even in the short amount of time in which we have shared the audio waves together. Thanks for being part of our journey here, and enjoy this interview with Dr. Lisa Angelina. I'll catch you on the other side. Good morning. I'm here with my dear friend, Dr. Lisa Angelina. And I wanted to set up straight away that we are sitting in Riverside Cemetery. So you're going to hear a lot of nature's participation in what we're doing today. But we chose to do it that way because we wanted to walk and visit and connect. But you're going to hear some really active crows. I want to set the scene for you a little bit, because if you've been following my podcast, you know that I love atmospheric moments, and it is very beautiful and atmospheric here. It's a little bit overcast. I think we're due for a little bit of rain today, which is very welcome. And I can even smell a little bit of rain in the air, and it's a little moody here, and we're under these two trees on this lovely bench, and it's very peaceful. So you may hear all kinds of things, and we'll just let that be part of the landscape of what we're doing today. And for those of you who are joining us new to my podcast, who are from Dr. Angelina's world, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here. And so I just want to set the stage a little bit for why I thought Lisa would be a great person to connect with. A, she's a dear friend and has wonderful perspectives and is super smart about all kinds of things in the world. And of course, she has her professional expertise to bring to this conversation. But if you've been following with me in mystery school, you know that we've talked a little bit about the senses as being a portal, if you will, for touching that part of us that is beyond thought. And so, like, really coming into a sensory experience of sound, taste, touch, etc., or even all of those together, and sort of tapping into that sensorial experience is a great way to dip into that part of ourselves that's not just constantly thinking and planning and wondering what the next thing to go out in the world and do is. So that is one reason I thought it would be fascinating to talk to Lisa. But I would just like to turn it over to her a little bit here at the beginning so that she can give us her background and how she came to do audiology. Her practice is WNC Audiology. So if you're not from the Asheville community, that stands for Western North Carolina Audiology. And she's had that practice in Asheville since 2004?
14.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's well established here. So I would like you, Lisa, to welcome you, and then
Just tell us a little bit about how you became interested in this profession and sort of anything that comes to mind about just serving people's needs here that you're doing on a daily basis, anything you want to add to that. And then we'll kind of move the conversation in the direction about sound and audio as well. But there's so many things that I don't think I know anecdotally about sound and about hearing that would probably be really interesting to me and our audience. So welcome.
Thank you
for being here. And
thank you,
yeah,
Lauren.
Just dive in.
So I have been an audiologist for about 28 years. And, you know, back when I went to school, you know, I didn't think, oh, I want to be an audiologist when I was a kid or anything. Cause, you know, it's one of those professions that lots of people don't know about. And, but I did in high school, you know, had a conversation with an adult who was, you know, asking me about what I was thinking about for college study, and I said, I just don't know. And in that conversation, somehow just a light bulb went on, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna be a speech pathologist. And at the time, you call them speech therapist. And because I went through many, many, many years of speech therapy, I was born with a cleft palate. It's something that, you know, came down in my family, and so I had a horrible speech issue, you know, in grade school. And you know, just I thought, well, gosh, I went through it, I can do this, you know. Yeah. And so when I got to my you know, undergraduate studies, you know, I dove right in. It was a master's program at the time, so you start undergraduate and then on to master's. And my very first year, I was taking, you know, audiology 205, you know, which is the very basic audiology class, because they kind of cross trained us. And I was like, what is this audiology? And, you know, when I was introduced to the audiogram, which is the graph that we use to, you know, mark, you know, person's hearing loss, I was fascinated. And then the anatomy of the ear, I mean, that just got me. It's just like, it's so detailed. It's so brilliant, you know. It's, you know, the way
its design
is brilliant. And so it got me, you know, in the first year. And you know, I just shifted from speech pathology to audiology, which, you know, in that program was very easy to do, because it was first semester. And and so I went through and got my master's, and then you know, throughout the years, audiology as a profession has grown and matured and leveled up. And so it's now a doctoring profession. So everyone that graduates, you know, is a doctor of audiology. Gotcha. And so for those of us who had studied long ago and didn't have that as an option, we had the option to go back into a transitional program so that we didn't have to like stop everything and go back to school. So I was continuing to work and doing, you know, online night classes. And so I completed that over, you know, 1.5 to 2 year period. And so now I have a doctorate, which is an AUD. It's a doctor of audiology.
Gotcha.
Back when I was in school, there was an option for a PhD in audiology, but that was more research driven. And the AUD is a, you know, the professional degree that has you practicing in the clinic.
Gotcha.
So
we're getting all kinds of sounds.
Yeah.
Speaking of
sound. So, yeah.
Okay. What anecdotal things or unusual things about sound or hearing might not the average person know? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are there things that come to mind that, you know, because it's one of the senses, the major senses. And I think, you know, we think often that maybe the knee-jerk reaction for many people is like, oh, I would never want to lose my sight. But hearing is so profoundly part of everything we're doing, mm-hmm. and even part of balance and mm-hmm. different things that are going on there. So I don't know if there's anything that comes to mind you could share with us. It might be interesting or unusual.
One quote I love to share, and maybe lots of people know this, but when Helen Keller was asked, and you know, of course she was blind and deaf, you know, if you were able to get one of them back, which one would it be? And she said, oh, my hearing, of course.
Wow.
She said, my sight keeps me away from things and my hearing keeps me away from people.
Oh, that's profound.
So, I mean, when I think back on my early studies, it was communicative disorders. So the speech pathologist learned about speech and language disorders, and you know, a hearing loss is a communication disorder. You know, like you aren't able to communicate as well, because when there's a hearing loss, you're missing things and you're misunderstanding things. And, you know, while you think that maybe you're hearing all that you need to hear, you know, you may answer someone incorrectly. And I think that's a hard perception that people have a time with, you know, like they don't realize the extent of it. When I think about treating a hearing loss, I think about the whole person and the whole family, you know, that's affected.
The whole family.
Whole family. Because when communication breaks down, then it affects everyone. It affects the person that has the hearing loss, but it affects the family member or the friend, you know, and it's kind of sad on both ends. When I think back on when I was a kid and I had communication breakdowns because my speech was so poor, you know, someone would ask me a question, I would answer, and they would have this look on their face, and then they would smile and nod, and I knew that they didn't get what I said, and that was the end of the conversation usually. And I don't want that for my patients. Like I want fluid conversation, and you know, to where people are connecting, you know, at a higher level. I mean, because hearing is very, very basic. You know, like that's what has to happen first. Like that's what we need to get back on board, and then communication can evolve and get even deeper and stronger.
I love that metaphor of thinking about it as communication, because that I don't think maybe the average person thinking of hearing loss is thinking about framing it in that way. And it made me think of when you were talking about as a child, and then do you feel some shame, even though it would be misplaced, it wasn't your fault, but did you carry a sense of shame at all? Because like, oh, if I only could communicate better, then I wouldn't, you know, like when you said you saw the look on people's faces, like I'm just wondering
it was an awful, awful feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And just the teasing and, you know, like, I mean, it was just, it was pretty awful. And so then I withdrew and tried to stay as quiet as possible, like not speak up. And, you know, so, it's just when I got my voice back, you know, like I literally, you know, had an appliance that I wore, you know, to correct the speech. And it just kind of slowly, slowly changed my life. And it's like, when I think about, you know, people that come in with hearing loss, I try to, you know, it's like I'm metaphorically, you know, wrapping my arms around them, just saying that this is going to be great. Like you're going to be able to hear much better and have communication be like a non-issue anymore, you know, where you're not struggling, not on the edge of your seat. I mean, I'm thinking like, I don't think I've answered your question about sound, because to me, it's about communication.
It's about communication.
You know?
Gotcha.
I mean, sound is, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that, because I mean, there are plenty of people who really get sad about missing out on all of the richness of music and birds and streams. You know, I mean, I had a pretty young guy who's a hunter, an outdoorsy kind of guy, and he came back after he was fit with his hearing aids for the first time, and he said, when I went home, I just sat on the porch and I opened a beer and I just listened, you know, and he just enjoy the nature sounds so much, you know, that he had been missing and kind of didn't really realize how quiet the world became,
yes.
you know, and just parts of it, because that's the thing about hearing loss, just like vision, you're not either blind or sighted. You can have like, you know, 20, 50, you know, vision and not see as clearly and need that corrected. Yes. You can need something closer. You can need something a little further back, you know, if you're reading. But with hearing, it's similar where you're not deaf or, you know.
It's not all or nothing.
Yes.
Right.
So when you have hearing loss and you think, well, I'm hearing these birds. I'm hearing Lori talking
yeah.
just fine.
Right.
But there are challenging listening situations that mm-hmm. make it hard for people to communicate, you know.
Are the majority of your patients older? Or,
yes.
I mean, it seems
yeah.
like that would be somewhat natural.
Well, sure. I mean, hearing yeah. loss occurs in all ages. But my clinic, you know, we serve mostly adults.
Right.
And older adults, you know, 60, 65, you know, up to 102.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's really neat to see the very, very old, you know, people who are walking with a cane or walking with, you know, someone's arm and still in, you know, really great shape in their minds and that they value their hearing. You know,
yes.
because, I mean, that's why they keep coming in, you know, like if they yes. didn't, then I wouldn't be seeing them. So
sure.
I love that.
And tell us a bit about, I have so many questions that are just going off in my head. Now this always happens when I start visiting with people, but, touch a bit if you don't mind, because I know you've just worked in a new phase of your practice that has to do with balance.
Yes.
And tell us about what's going on there and why somebody might reach out to you with imbalance.
Yes. So dizziness and imbalance is a very prevalent issue in all ages, but, you know, much more in adults and older adults. And so I decided, because that's part of audiology, is vestibular care, to bring in a full battery of evaluation equipment that can help pinpoint, you know, is this balance issue having to do with the body and structure and feet? Does it have to do with the brain? Does it have to do with the inner ear? And we can pinpoint which of those areas is causing the problem, and then the rehabilitation is much easier and faster. And most dizziness issues can be fixed, you know, which is very promising, you know, like
yeah.
it's just, and almost like a relief, you know, hopefully
yes.
for people to hear that they don't have to live with this, you know.
Yes.
It can be resolved.
Cool. And that's, there aren't a lot of folks, at least in our area, if you're in the Asheville area, that are testing for balance or have
that's right.
your capacity
that's right.
to
yeah.
do that.
I mean, we have very sophisticated equipment, and, you know, there are a couple of other practices that have, you know, similar equipment, but, you know, it's really state of the art and brand new. And yeah, that helps us to, like I said, very precisely, you know, pinpoint where the issue is.
That's awesome. I don't know if our audience
right.
can, we've got a little bit of rain starting
yeah.
here. We're under this tree, so we're good for now. But you may hear the rain. So I want to weave in another part of the conversation here, because I hadn't thought of it until I saw this film called Sound of Metal. Have you seen Sound of Metal?
No.
So I think it came out maybe in 2019, and it was fascinating, and I think you would really enjoy it, but I can see perhaps worlds colliding is the wrong word, but you know, a cool conversation, since we're having this whole broader topic be about communication. Because let me set up the film a little bit. It's this young guy and his girlfriend who are in this band, and he's the drummer, and it's like super loud, like almost, you know, like grunge or whatever, you know, like this super raucous music, right? Super, super loud. And he's, you know, it opens with him drumming, blah, 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 you know. And then he starts to experience hearing loss, and it's a crash. Like, it's not a subtle thing. Like, it just crashes. And over a really short course of time, he has lost his hearing, and he's panicking and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And, part of the film is about the fact that he joined a Vietnam vet is running a deaf community and sort of embraces people in a space where they're only surrounded by those who are using American Sign and embracing their new life in these conditions. Mm. In these new sensory conditions, and learning to live and thrive in that space and communicate in this new way. And of course he resists it at first and then surrenders a bit, and it's what he learns in that space about communication without the aid of hearing. And then there's this moment later in the film, and I won't give spoilers away for folks who want to see it, but he's given the opportunity with a breakthrough in a hearing aid, and then the sound he hears versus the sound he remembered versus the silence he had been learning to embrace in this deaf community. So it was all those worlds coming together, and then his choice about how he chose to live going forward. And I won't say anything more about that, because it's kind of the setup for the film, his exploration. So I'm curious if, you know, I'd never considered until I saw that film that somebody might choose not to to hear and to communicate then in this other way that they felt is so rich, and they were experiencing something in stillness or silence, but yet still being able to communicate that was somehow nourishing and satisfying. So I thought that was a really important piece to bring in to the hearing conversation, because there's lots of ways we hear. There's definitely sound. There's definitely spoken or music, or the, you know, this beautiful rain and all of that. But there are many ways to hear.
Yes.
You know, metaphorical ways. Are you listening to your soul? Are you listening to your spirit? Are you listening? Are you reading the room in terms of body language and all of those sorts of things? So maybe if you could take any riff from that and talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, when I think about most challenging, you know, people to work with, you know, there's a little bit of a, you know, inside joke in the audiology community that engineers are tough. They know everything about frequencies and, you know, amplitudes, and they want to talk about all that. But the harder clientele are the musicians.
Oh.
And, you know, it's like someone punched them in the gut, you know, when they lose their hearing, because it's, they've got the communication issue, but they also know how the music is supposed to sound, and it doesn't sound like that anymore. You know, like, at first they're just missing it, but then when they get fitted with hearing aids, it's like, we're hearing now, you know, with hearing aids through a an electronic device.
Right.
That's, not the same as our normal hearing.
Sound of metal. I think that's where that title comes from.
I was thinking it wasn't the...
Well, I think it's layered. And the heavy metal. But it's
you know, it can sound very strange at first. And, you know, the hearing aids have become more and more and more natural sounding. But the very keen ear of a musician can hear, like, that is not right, you know? Yeah. And so it takes time, and it takes determination. It takes, like, I'm gonna let my brain reinterpret this and let it be the new normal. And that's a really hard thing to be up against when you love music as much as musicians do. And even just music lovers that don't play, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly the people that play that they know how it's supposed to sound. They remember it a different way. And so it's my job to kind of help them along this journey to a place where they can start to accept the new sounds that are coming through this device and, you know, interpret it as good again, you know.
Wow.
So that's the thing that came to mind, you know, when you mentioned this.
Yeah.
And the other part is the not wanting to hear, you know, like mm-hmm. that baffles me a little bit. But I mean, and I'm thinking more about the sometimes older patients that have gone way too long without hearing, like, you know, 10, 20 years, and they just got used to the world being the way that quiet, you know, in their
right.
world. And then when we introduce it back, they have a rough time, or they just say, I don't want it back, you know, and it's just, it's sad for me because I know what, you know, if they moved through this process of getting to the other side of like, this is starting to sound good and normal again, like a new normal, that it's at least a game changer, if not a life changer, you know, for the whole family, like I said.
Yeah.
But I can understand that if, you know, someone is in love with their music and it just doesn't sound the same, you know, I just want to offer encouragement that it can be good again, you know, with hearing aids and cochlear implants, you know, it can be good again, though the process to get there, I always, you know, use the analogy of like physical therapy or an exercise program where you can't do a day of exercise and expect the results the next day.
Right.
You have to do it for a little while, maybe 6 weeks, you know, and with hearing, it could be up to 3 months of, you know, listening to the world through these new devices and starting to accept the way that it sounds, even though it's a little different. And then it starts to sound good again.
Yeah. I don't know what that was. Maybe a dog?
Mm-hmm.
If you're hearing that, Lisa and I are still here.
We're still alive.
Think that's a dog. It almost sounds like a donkey braying over there, but I think it's dogs. Anyway, that when you're talking about musicians, and I will look this up if Lisa doesn't know the term and post this at the end of our recording today. But it reminded me that the lead singer of Alabama Shakes, when she, there's some phenomenon, and I looked it up on Wikipedia, and I'm just spacing the name, you may be aware of this, where when she's creating music, she sees sound in color as well.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that?
Yes, and I don't remember the term.
The term. I'll look it up and I'll post it at the end because I know there's a specific term. But when she's creating music, she also is seeing color. And so it's almost like she's, and I just like, there's so many mysteries of the brain, right? That there's another part of her brain that's firing in close proximity, if you will. Don't really have the language of this. And then that other sensory experience is coming in with that. And so when she creates music, she's also working with visual color.
Wow.
And that just blows my mind, you know, of all the different ways that these sensory experiences can riff off each other and come together. And I will add to that too, I've been doing some prep for a course I'm teaching, and was doing some reading, of course, for C.G. Jung and another author, a French author, if you're not familiar with him, Henri Corbin, which is maybe more the French pronunciation, but he's a French philosopher, if you're not familiar with him. But they both spoke of in their writings when they felt really inspired by particular things that were meaningful in their bodies of work, that those texts almost arrived
in an orchestral moment, almost like a musical movement. Mm-hmm. It was words, but it also came almost on the wave of music as well, which I thought was so fascinating. So almost like coming, I mean, you could really get metaphorical and soulful here, but it's almost like coming from another realm and sort of on the wings of music. Or, you know, if you wanted to take that in a very scientific route, you know, just another part of the brain mm-hmm. where that thought or idea or imagination was stimulated with something that was very akin, even though it was language going down on paper mm-hmm. in a story or in a text, it was very akin to music. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Corbin and Jung would talk about the musical pieces that they were hearing when they were talking about particular texts sometimes, like, oh, this is Handel or what, you know. It was just, it was fascinating to me to weave in that idea. So I just wanted to toss that in there since you were talking about musicians. So, yeah. Anything.
What comes up for me is, the way that, sound and music makes me feel inside, you know? So when I sing in a choir, I mean, it was like, sometimes it was all I could do to hold back tears, you know, because yeah. it was so moving. Yeah. And I watched a little video of this tiny baby. I mean, I think that they, you know, maybe 6 months, you know, watching Whitney Houston on a big screen and her voice is just so big and so, you know, powerful. And the baby started crying. And it's a song that I cry every time when I listen to it. And the baby did. And it's like the baby couldn't have really understood the meaning of
the language.
Yes. But it was just the power of it,
of
you know,
sound.
And it just moved the baby to tears. And it was
That gives you chills.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of frequency, too. Mm-hmm. Is there, what can you help just the average person? We've got a car coming by now. Mm-hmm. understand about frequency. Because, like, even doing audio for the podcast, I'm so amazed now that, like, I see these frequency patterns and sound patterns that, you know, like when I'm working with my software and editing, and sound is so cool when it's visual
yes.
on a pattern.
Yes.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. And I can now, you know, not even being much of an expert, I'm like, oh, there's a breath. There's a, you know, like I can, mm-hmm. I know what it's looking like on my sound pattern yes. when I go into edit or whatever, or there's a dog bark or that's a mistake. I need to get rid of this bit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I love that we can capture that in an electronic way. So mm-hmm. obviously, so anything about that or frequency itself that you'd like to add?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you record speech, you may notice that it goes across many frequencies, very low to very high, and kind of depending on where the fundamental frequency of the person's voice is.
Mm.
You know, deeper voices, men's voices, you know, baritone, you know, mm-hmm. is going to start off much lower. And then, you know, a higher pitch voice is going to, you know, start higher and go higher, you know, like their whole range is higher. But, you know, what I try to explain is that you can hear these sounds over here, but you're missing these over here. And that's
okay.
why you're not understanding everything, because the human voice and our speech goes across all these different frequencies.
Gotcha.
And the other thing about frequencies that came to mind is that our ear canal has its own resonance. Just like glasses, like if you were going to fill up some wine glasses or, you know, water glasses with different things like sand or water or, you know, stones, and then kind of clink them, they're going to sound different because there's a different resonance, or the different shape of them is going to cause a different resonance. And so we do a specific measurement in the ear canal to accommodate whether your ear canal is enhancing or diminishing a certain frequency, so that we get you hearing the best you can across all the frequencies that you need to hear speech and music.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
All, it's almost like all the layers. And I know a good mic, so I invested in a good mic for the podcast. And, and we're just, you know, we're not behind that mic right now. but I know
when I hear my voice having recorded with my mic versus just, you know, on the go with my phone here, you know, it's pulling out different warmths and frequencies of my voice. That's fascinating to me, that it's picking up on different things to enhance or to color the sound. And yes.
And hearing aid technology has, you know, improved so much over the years that it's, you know, able to pick more things up to, you know, have people hearing more naturally.
Absolutely. Well, it makes perfect sense that the technology would evolve with the practice. So I want to end, Lisa, with our Proust questionnaire, which I always share with my guests. And you bravely said you're open to all the questions. And I rolled the dice before we came here. And I remember the first, you, my listening community will know that whenever I do this, invariably one of my interviewees gets the question, when do you lie? And you didn't get that one. The dice didn't roll that way.
I never do.
Exactly, because you're totally honest. So I didn't even need to bring that up, but that that question, on what occasion do you lie? I'm like, oh my gosh, if this comes up again, because we've had great conversations in the past with folks about that.
I mean, interesting that it's that you specifically say that I didn't get that, because you know, I kind of pride myself on my, you know, honesty and, you know, like being forthright and just being authentic. Like, I'm always working on authenticity for myself, for my staff, you know, just being with my patients, you know, authentically. So I mean, and I just feel like there shouldn't be a whole lot of reason to lie.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
In general in life, you know.
Exactly. You know.
So anyway, and what's my question?
Having just known you as a person, I've never been to you in a professional hearing space, but I know that you would be so welcoming and be about the whole family and so nurturing. And that is not something you're going to meet every day. So kudos to you for what you're doing in our community. And yeah, so the first question for you today is, what are your favorite names? What are your favorite names?
When, I have to say that Lori let me see the long, long list of these questions. And when I saw that question, the names that came up were Warren, Mia, and Karina.
Of course.
Those are my favorite names.
Yeah.
Because that's my husband and my two daughters. And, you know, I mean, that's like the cute answer, I guess. But, you know, I mean, I really did think about, I mean, of course, I didn't get to choose Warren's name, but I did choose my daughter's names.
Yeah.
And so Mia is my first daughter, and it means my, and I, you know, I don't know if it was selfishly or if I just wanted to, you know, carry on the name, you know, but my last name is Angelina, and I chose that name, actually. I was born a Buttiglieri, and it was a very tough Sicilian name, hard to spell and hard to say, and you know, so I chose another name in our family, Angelina, and so I named Mia Angelina Sander, you know, so she has her dad's last name, and that's my angel, that's my little angel,
oh,
you know, beautiful. So that's what her name means, and it just, while I was pregnant with her, and just when she was born, it was like, oh my goodness, this is my little angel,
angel, my Angelina,
yeah. So when I was pregnant with Karina, I wasn't able to know the gender, and so you know, not until she was born, and even that day when she was born, I didn't have a name picked out completely.
Oh, really?
Because I wanted, you know, certain you know, I was playing with different names, and Karina came to mind, and I really loved it, and I wanted her middle name to be Angelina as well, so that she could have both of our last names.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know if some of you know, remember Saturday Night Live with Rosanna Dana.
Oh, yes.
You know, I didn't want it to be like Karina Angelina, you know, is a little much. And so my sister, who, you know, was there at the birth, said, what about putting in a little extra name, you know, with Karina's name? And what about Joy? And that's my sister's middle name.
Aww.
And so her name is Karina Joy. That's her first name, Angelina Sander.
Lovely.
So I love their names. So
and that helped with the musicality of,
yes,
of the name.
Karina,
yes.
Joy.
Karina Joy.
Yeah, so
that's lovely.
Rhyming.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
So
the second question is, what is your most treasured possession?
That is a hard one.
For some people, possessions aren't much of a thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking about. That's why it was hard, because it's like I have things kind of come and go in my life, and that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I guess my wedding ring came to mind, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I guess that would be...
That's a great answer, yeah. And the third question is, what is your present state of mind, or your current state of mind? So I'm guessing, I mean, of course, right now in our conversation, but probably just
kind
to your outlook right now, what's your frame of mind right now?
It's optimistic and I say that hesitantly, because it's like I get on the edge of it, and sometimes I'm not optimistic just about the future of the world, you know.
Yeah.
But I just know that it feels good to be hopeful. And so I try to, you know, keep that as my state of mind, you know, hopeful.
Absolutely.
And optimistic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm not without... doubt and insecurity sometimes.
Which is why you didn't get the lie question, because you're like, there's doubt, and that's just part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Lisa, where can folks find you if they're in our area? How's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm right across from Mission Hospital, 285 McDowell Street.
Another little car.
Yeah. On the web, it's wncaudiology.com.
Okay, great.
And, I'm just right next to Asheville High School, and in the same building with WNC Ear, Nose, and Throat, Dr. Barry Pate Jr.
Okay.
So,
thank you so much for your time and your perspective today, and for being such a dear friend.
Thank you, Lori. This has been great.
So I hope you enjoyed that, and... The term that I referenced in our interview is actually called synesthesia, S-Y-N-E-S-T-H-E-S-I-A. And I'm reading just a bit here from the APA, the American Psychological Association, article about this. And this is really fascinating. So just follow along here with me. Guitar music doesn't just tickle Carol Crane's fancy, it also brushes softly against her ankles. When she hears violins, she also feels them on her face. Trumpets make themselves known on the back of her neck. In addition to feeling the sounds of musical instruments on her body, Crane sees letters and numbers in brilliant hues. And for her, units of time each have their own shape. She sees the months of the year as the cars on a Ferris wheel, with July at the top, December at the bottom. Sean Day, PhD, tastes in Technicolor. Quote, the taste of beef, such as steak, produces a rich blue, says Day, a linguistics professor at National Central University in Taiwan. mango sherbet appears as a wall of lime green with thin, wavy stripes of cherry red. Steamed ginger squid produces a large glob of bright orange foam about 4 feet away directly in front of me. Crane and day share an extraordinary sensory condition called synesthesia. The phenomenon, its name derives from the Greek meaning to perceive together, comes in many varieties. Some synesthetes hear, smell, taste, or feel pain in color. Others taste shapes, and still others perceive written digits, letters, and words in color. Some possess what researchers call conceptual synesthesia, see abstract concepts such as units of time or mathematical operations as shapes projected either internally or in the space around them, and many synesthetes experience more than one form of the condition. So it's a thing, and it's fascinating, and I just marvel at the experiential side of our lives, and I value experience more than I ever have, and being deeply rooted in the self as much as we can and experiencing all that life has to offer. So without trying to sound cliche in any way, I just wish you a beautiful week ahead, and I will check in with you soon in July, and we'll let some music take us on out to the end. Thank you. And until next time, take good care. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.